the people speak. Good morning. 9:28. This is Jeff, and this is The People Speak on this Friday morning. I hope everyone's doing fine. And we're going to be talking today with Congressman Mike Bost, who's joining us this morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. Well, I'm telling you, I got home late last night, and it's very good to be back home to Southern Illinois, where actually people have common sense.
So. I was going to say, you've been pretty busy here lately.
It's been a wild time, and from a historical perspective, I guess it's interesting from that aspect if you're a studier of history. But the House voted on two articles of impeachment, which I voted no because I believe the two articles they had were not crimes. They were actually many things that the administration has under the existing rules, no matter how bad you spin it. Until you have the criteria that's set forth in our Constitution, which is treason, bribery, or high crimes or misdemeanors, you don't have an impeachable offense. And apparently the Speaker has realized that too, because I guess she's delaying actually moving the article. They had the vote, but now they're not going to move the articles over, or we don't know when they're going to move the articles over. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
And that's what I was going to say. I heard on the news. I heard on the news this morning that she was holding those and really didn't give a reason why she wasn't.
Right. And you know, we've all been, those of us who studied, and remember, I think I've said this many times on your show, remember the most quoted, least read document is in D.C. is the Constitution. And to really study, and that's what it's in, and it has driven us to the point where we have to really study, are you doing this right according to the Founding Fathers. I've done a lot of research now on reading the Federalist Papers. I know for a fact where we were at with this. However, now, I don't know, you know, I mean, the question scholars are actually asking, it does say that the House has, in the Constitution, it says, the House has the sole right to impeach. The Senate has the sole right to try an impeachment. But when it says in there that when articles of impeachment have been decided and passed by the House, they will be forwarded to the Senate. But it's not sure when that forwarding should be. And so I think she's just showing what, you know, I mean, I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, Independent. This just shows blatant partisanship. And this is the problem that exists also with the two articles that are out there that they work to get. Now, remember, over the last 3 years, because they came on strong and said, we're going to impeach him even before he was sworn in. And then others, we're going to impeach him for this. There were seven different times they said they were going to impeach him for different things, that none of them rose to the point of high crime, misdemeanor, treason, or bribery. Now, they said bribery a few times, but the evidence didn't show it. And therefore, that's why they had the meetings in secret before they came out, to try to just leak things out. I think it comes from with a world of social media, which we live in. If we just say it enough, it's going to be fact. Well, no, it doesn't. And it doesn't prove out. And so you come with these two things that are not crimes and say, okay, now we're going to impeach based on this. Now, let me tell you that in Illinois, we actually could, because in Illinois, there's a lower bar. The Constitution in Illinois said high crimes, misdemeanors, or dereliction of duty. Well, that dereliction of duty is a wide-ranging thing that you can claim. But when it's treason and bribery and high crimes or misdemeanors, it's got to be some very, very clear evidence in this time and in this United States where you have an act of due process. You know, when we impeach Rod Blagojevich and we move forward with impeachment for Rod Blagojevich, actual crimes you could point to, right? Let me go over the three other. Well, actually, it was two other impeachments and one impeachment almost that took place. Each one of them can go back to a crime. Now, the question is, do you feel the crime should be, when the Senate takes the trial up, is it worthy of being removed from office? And twice, when the articles were brought before, which were crimes, the Senate decided that not worth removing from office. And let's look at the first one, Jeff. And I know this is very interesting history because I've been working on a lot here recently. President Johnson, who was vice president for Abraham Lincoln, was the first person that the United States Congress impeached. But let me tell you how the impeachment went down. Basically, what happened is Johnson was picked for vice president by Abraham Lincoln as a uniter to try to bring the South back. He was a Southerner. He was from the Southern states, so he did not agree with the war. But he did have a sense of concern for the Southern states. Abraham Lincoln thought, that's great, I'll have him as my vice president as we move forward to reconstruct this United States, not knowing that Lincoln was going to be killed. And so after Lincoln's death and he becomes president, Congress does not trust him because he is a Southern sympathizer. So therefore, they pass a law that says you cannot replace any of Lincoln's cabinet. Well, one, that's a violation of our Constitution and the powers that we've given to our chief executive officer, but they move forward with it anyway. They sent it to then-President Johnson. Obviously, he vetoed it. When he vetoed it, it came back, and it came back, and they overrode his veto. And then the day it was passed, he fired then-Secretary of War Staunton, and basically that's where they said he had a crime. So there, you have the crime. Now, after they impeached him on that crime, they took it to the Senate, and the Senate did not have the two-thirds majority necessary to remove him from office based on that crime. Now, if we move forward to Dick Nixon, Dick Nixon had a very unique situation that he was being investigated. They were getting ready to move articles of impeachment. They wanted, just like Nadler and Pelosi and Schiff, wanted information from the president, which he claimed executive privilege on. So what did they do? They went to the proper channels through the courts, and the courts ruled that not all things he was claiming executive privilege on, but the tapes that he was claiming executive privilege on do not fall under executive privilege. After that ruling, Dick Nixon resigned because he knew there was evidence there. Now, the thing that happened the other day is our Congress never went through that. They actually subpoenaed, but when the president claimed executive privilege, which every president, including George Washington, has used, they had the process to go to the court to see if what he was claiming executive privilege on was, but they said, no, we don't have time for that. So they moved forward with what they continued to do and then charged the president with a charge, which is a term that's never been used before, and that is obstruction of Congress. We've never ever had that in our English language before, okay? Why? Because every president, there are things they ask for because of the difference in the separation of powers. They would not provide it. So instead of going through the courts, they used it as one of the impeachable items, which makes no sense whatsoever. So now let's move forward. And so Dick Nixon resigned. So they did not move forward with any of the articles on Dick Nixon because he resigned. Now let's move forward to Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton, and it was a long time that the investigation under Mike Starr was being investigated. And then as the investigation went on, the charge that came out that was a charge and was fact and was proven later was he perjured himself. Now, that was then taken to the Senate as an act of impeachment, and that was the article. But the Senate then made a decision, and that's what the Senate has to do because they're in trial. The question is, was the crime of lying under oath over a sexual encounter worth removing of the president? And they did not get a supermajority to agree that that was the case. Therefore, President Clinton was not removed from office. He was impeached. Now let's move forward to today and look at what we've done. We have taken two charges that wouldn't be a crime anyplace else. We took and moved forward with an investigation that had no witnesses allowed to testify in opposition until after the secret hearings. Then they did not allow the minorities, which has always had that ability before, to call their witnesses. And they didn't allow the president to have attorneys present to defend himself during what would be a grand jury, and it's not really a grand jury, but that's the way they always refer to it. And because you would hear on the media, you would think, oh my gosh, there's an act of treason. Oh my gosh, there's an act of bribery. Actually, there was no act of bribery, and there was no quid pro quo. So they kept changing the wording based on what they were trying to sell, based on polls. That's not how this is supposed to go. This is a very, very serious matter. Yet, we move forward. Now, think about this. Early on, about 10 months ago, Nancy Pelosi said, before we can move forward with any impeachment, we must make sure that it evidence that it is credible. There's one other word I'm forgetting in there. She gave two words that were very, very clear that we had to meet these standards. I don't have my notes in front of me. And then also it must be bipartisan. Let me tell you, it met, and I've got a video out there that I put out on Facebook that has me going through the dictionary with those three words, explaining exactly what they meant. We have never met that criteria. And the only part of this impeachment that was bipartisan was the no votes. And what do I mean by that? All Republicans voted no. Two of the Democrats voted no, and one Democrat voted present. And one of the Democrats that voted no, after the vote, stood up and said, I denounce my party, and I'm leaving this party and going to the Republican Party because this is just such a sham, and was nothing but a political ploy, which was never meant to be, and the founding fathers, Jefferson, Monroe, and Madison, all wrote about it in the Federalist Papers on the danger of going down the path of having an impeachment strictly on a partisan type situation. It's a very dangerous precedent. I think I talked way too long for you, Jeff. I'm sorry.
That's okay. But I said earlier, I heard that on the news this morning, and I'm like, in any type of trial setting where anything's being tried, once you have rock solid evidence, you go forward with it. You don't sit there and say, okay, well, we've got it, but we're going to hold it off a little bit here.
Right. Yeah. And it's frustrating because you've got to understand. I guess the thing that bothers me most is the people who are in those hearings. Now, understand, I'm not in those committee of jurisdictions, okay? Now, there are others that have the same background as me that are in there, and I'd love to be on it. I just haven't, I chose Veterans Affairs and Ag and those things that are vital to my district. But on that Judiciary Committee and on the committee that shouldn't have jurisdiction, the Adam Schiff's committee, which actually didn't have the authority to do what it was doing, okay? But that's okay. There were scholars, people on both sides now, on both sides, that know the Constitution well. They know law well. Matter of fact, John Ratcliffe, who's one of the members on the committee that was very clear on his position and what he knew, and if you go back and listen to his statements, he is one of the best-known federal prosecutors that has handled cases like this before. And his testimonies are amazing. And the neat thing about that is he's the one that I told you that he graduated from Carbondale High School in 1983.
Oh, wow.
So, though he's from Texas, he was elected out of Texas. He grew up here in Southern Illinois. But that being said, we had people, and they had people. That's what bothers me more than anything. Some of the people that were on that committee were known jurists, and yet they let their party push on past, even to the point that, like I said, the people that voted no knew it and knew that's what they were going down the path of. And that's very, very frustrating for this system that was put in place by our forefathers. For only in the worst case scenario do we move forward with impeachment. And I want to say to your listeners, if you're from Illinois and a decade ago you didn't understand what real impeachment was, because if you remember, when we impeached Rod Blagojevich, there was 21 yes votes out of committee. Not a single Republican or Democrat voted no. There were actually two votes in the House of Representatives before it went to the Senate. One, because it was taken late, okay, and it was taken late and an election was occurring. And so they said, okay, we're going to wait till after the election and take a second vote. So we made the vote. It was unanimous. The election was over. The new body was sworn in the first week of January at University of Illinois Springfield on stage. We signed our documents as soon as we became legal, and they had a roll call vote for the impeachment. It was 114, even though we had 118 members, not all of them were seated that day. We had 115 members present, 114-1. And the one dissenting vote was Deb Mell, who is the sister-in-law of Rod Blagojevich. It went to the Senate. It was tried very quickly. And it was unanimous to remove him from office. That all happened in an 8-week period after the fact that we knew crimes had been committed, even though 16 months before that, I had made the statement on the floor, I believe we needed to start an investigation into impeachment at that time. And if you understand that the 13 articles of impeachment that we placed on Rod Blagojevich that we removed him from office with, which we could have got more, but we thought 13 was enough, 11 of those had already been committed on the day that I rose, stood up and rose and thought we should start an investigation on possible impeachment. So when I hear people on social media or people contact me and say, oh, no, he needs to be impeached. No, no. I know what that really looks like. And I take an oath of office to uphold the Constitution. And so many people on social media go, you're not upholding your oath to the Constitution. Yes, I am. Because it says that I have to obey and defend it. And obey and defend it means that you have to have bribery, treason, high crime, or misdemeanor. And it has to be able to be proven. And we don't have that. What do we got? We got two charges. We got the obstruction of Congress is what they call it. And then we have abuse of powers. Well, if you look at abuse of power, almost every president, it's a constant battle between Congress and the House on what's abuse of power. And so without a clear definition, now, do we need at the future, if you want, when we're not fighting over a president like this, we can sit down and say, okay, let's see what abuse of power is. Because if abuse of power is they're just doing not what you like and you're from the opposite party, well, get over that, because I dealt with that for several years, but I didn't go down the track of impeachment. So it has been a very unique week. It's been a challenging week. It has passed, but as you said, it is being held up because I don't think their evidence is strong.
Exactly. All right, I'll tell you what, Congressman, we need to take a break here. We'll go ahead and do that, and we'll come back and talk some more here in a minute.
All right, thank you.
This is The People Speak. We'll be right back. Welcome back. And again, today we're talking with Congressman Mike Bost, and I've been talking about, obviously, the impeachment hearings that's been going on in Washington. Another thing, Congressman, that has been in the news is the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement.
Yep, we got that passed yesterday. It's a very positive thing. It will continue to be positive for the United States. It is a trade agreement where the benefit to the majority of your listeners that are in agriculture know how important it is, and know that I've been pushing for it for over a year ever since it was brought down from the president ready to move. Unfortunately, it was being held up with the impeachment to try to, I can explain the politics of that. Let's worry about what's really happening with it. It is actually now moving on to the Senate. I hope it moves very, very quickly. The problem is if we moved it a year ago, the advantages it would have given to the commerce and others through the administration and the president himself in negotiating with China. Because remember this, Mexico is our largest trade partner. Canada is our second. China is our third. When trying to deal with China, and I know that many of your listeners understand how China cheated and how every time we turned around, we had to take them back to the WTO for violations and things that they would try to do as far as dumping, and it was every type of product out there. But as the president was doing the trade negotiations with China, the problem is that certain things are key. If China knew we were having trouble putting our relations together with our two biggest allies in trade, then it gave them a leverage of, I can be kind of snippety here and cause a rift among their people, among our American people, whether it's the farmers or other people in the trades or whatever the industry is. So by delaying this, it actually gave, even in a very uneasy position when you're trying to figure out, what is my crop going to sell for this next year? What happens as far as production is one thing, but when the markets are so affected by the fear that the deal won't come through or that they won't buy and are we going to put a tariff on or there's going to be these tariffs that remain on,
All of that could have been cured by moving this forward before, but now it's been moved forward. I believe that the Senate will take it up fairly quickly. I think President of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, the head of the Senate, the majority leader in the Senate, made some comments that he's not sure how soon they're going to act on it because of the impeachment. Well, and I've heard some of his own members say, no, we're going to act. And I think that's going to be the case. They're going to act fairly quickly when we get back in January. Obviously, they can't work on the impeachment until she sends the articles over. So it is vitally important that this moves on. We actually had some changes that were done. Then our head of commerce and Ross also went down along with a few others to negotiate with Mexico. So the agreement is there. It just needs to be sent to the president and signed into law so that we can move forward. And what it means for jobs is an amazing amount of jobs around this nation. What it means for trade is our products will be moving. We're back dealing with the two nations that we need to deal with. They're our largest trade partners. However, there's also some very, very good things in there that force them into a situation where it allows us a better opportunity to compete. So there are some very, very strict pay requirements so that, you know, when we started losing, and if you remember when NAFTA was created, all the manufacturing jobs we've lost to Mexico. Why? Because there was no stipulation on what they had to pay and then justify that they were paying that much in salaries, that there were benefits and there were safety precautions that allowed us to compete because we had our laws saying what they did. And we went down to Mexico and none of those were in place. So the overhead was a whole lot different. And so they could basically take our markets away from us. This now has some very, very strict guidelines that they can't do that. Workers, and that's a benefit for employees in Mexico, that they will be able to receive a decent wage. And what you're seeing is that's why you're seeing also a lot of the jobs come back to the United States, which is a wonderful thing. And when you're dealing with Canada, there was a lot of agriculture things, though most of our grain farmers don't understand they do understand, but they don't have to deal with it. But the dairy farmers and what Canada did up there with the tariffing and blocking of dairy products to try to basically protect themselves, the language has been put in to try to cure that problem. And so it's a very good agreement. We're moving forward with it and look forward to all the work that's coming.
All right, Congressman. Well, it looks like we're out of time, but do appreciate you. Go ahead.
Let me say right quick, Jeff. Thank you so much for what you do and have me on every month and everything like that. And I want to wish a very, very, very Merry Christmas to, we're not in such a politically correct environment here that I can't say Merry Christmas. So Merry Christmas to you. If you're of that faith, if you're of another faith, have a happy holidays. And I hope everybody gets to enjoy time with their family and friends. And remember, we're still in the greatest nation that has ever existed.
I agree with that. And a Merry Christmas to you and your family as well.
All right. Have a great one.
All right. We will talk to you next month then.
Sounds great.
For the People Speak, I'm Jeff. We will talk to you again on Monday. Have a great weekend.